This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here. City Hall insider Paul Osborne joins us, the former mayor of Decatur, twice elected by the people of this community to lead, and a longtime publisher of the Decatur Tribune. Paul, I don't know if you've looked at those pictures of the National Guardsmen and women sleeping in the Capitol, 20,000 in the nation's capital ahead of next week's inauguration, and after what happened last Wednesday, I heard just there in the news more than what we have in Iraq and Afghanistan. How do you reconcile all of this morning?
It's difficult. It really is when you think. This is not the nation that we're familiar with. I've been to the Capitol. I'm sure you have, and about everybody else listening here. And it's such a solemn place. It's you're almost in awe when you walk in. And I don't know. It's kind of the heart of what we are as a nation. And to see those pictures, you think you're looking at some other country in some other part of the world where there's a dictator or something going on, civil war, and we're just not familiar or used to that. It's shocking. It really is.
And I don't know if you've read about, you know, the number of people, you know, being arrested, firefighters, police officers, at least one active military member, housewives. I mean, it's across the spectrum. Why do you think so many of these people seem to be surprised that they're being held accountable for their actions?
I don't know. And maybe they just they're caught up in all of this. I don't understand a lot of the people that I've known for many years who are still very adamant, even at this point, that the election was stolen from Trump. And despite no evidence to the contrary at all, and believe me, as you know, they've looked everywhere, and what it's been before in court 50 times, and the bottom line is there's no evidence. And if you still believe that, I guess you will believe anything. And they're just caught up, I think, in something they feel is bigger than what they are, and they want to be a part of it. And yet they really haven't considered the consequences of what they're doing and how it's going to impact on their life and the lives of their families. They think what they're doing is the right thing to do, and I don't really see how they can believe that.
Yeah, I was reading about the two cops that were arrested yesterday that are from a town in Virginia. You would think certainly that law enforcement officers would understand that they're breaking the very rules they are employed to enforce, and a Capitol police officer died because of this.
Well, that's another aspect of this, too, that you know, most of the people in this movement are people that have always strongly supported the police, would not think of defunding the police and standing up for the police, you know, when riots took place other places in our nation. And you know, backing the police, and here all of a sudden they're beating up police, even killing police officers. And I don't believe that represents the movement itself, but it's defining the movement in the minds of a lot of people, and a lot of people who supported Trump and who supported a lot of the programs that he gave to this nation and presented it to this nation. They're turning their back on that and saying, I don't know. I don't want to be with this anymore. I'm not about this. And unfortunately, those few, and I'm saying few compared to the millions and tens of millions in this nation, have defined a movement, and it's not good for everybody else who's attached to it.
Some of these folks went to the nation's capital, a Colorado man who had 2,500 rounds of ammunition along with the weapons that he brought with him. That's not a spontaneous, caught-up-in-the-moment thing.
No, it's not. And I know some people who went there, senior citizens even, who went there to hear the speech and kind of give support to Trump and support to what Trump has been telling people. They went with an honest heart, and they backed off as soon as they saw what was happening and came home. And so I think a lot of the people that went to the nation's capital went with honest motivation, but those weren't the people that caused all the ruckus and caused the death and just the terrible, terrible image created over the country and the world by what they did. You know, they defeated the cause they said they wanted to stand up for.
Yeah, and I get the caught up in the moment thing. I mean, I do. But if you're standing and posing with pictures of people who are wearing stuff, making fun of Auschwitz or the more than 1 million Jews that were killed in those concentration camps, I mean, it's hard to reconcile that, right? I mean, why would you do that?
Well, how do you stand up for what this country believes and probably what many of these people have always believed by trying to tear it down? It just seems like such a paradox to me. The actions that they always protested before are the actions they're taking now themselves, and it's okay. Well, it's not okay. It wasn't okay to be burning buildings, you know, last summer in protest of something and rioting. And it's not okay to go into the nation's capital and do the same thing. And somehow they have defined that as a righteous cause, and there's nothing righteous about it. It's violent.
Yesterday in Springfield, we officially learned that we have a new Speaker of the House, and only with the craziness going on nationally in our politics would this seem to be a lesser story. There's never been a longer-running Speaker in the United States of America than Mike Madigan. He's now done. Were you surprised at this news?
No, not really. And you probably received it too. Sue Shearer indicated in a press release to me, I think a day or two before the vote was going to be taken, that she would not be voting for Mike Madigan for Speaker of the House. So the writing was on the wall. I don't see how Democrats in particular could vote Mike Madigan as Speaker of the House with everything that has gone on in the last year. And there's no question in everything that's going on and people being arrested and charged that Mike Madigan was a part of that. How much of that, we still don't know. But you can't really make that person Speaker of the House regardless of how long he's been in there.
There was a brief time, 1995 to 1997, when Republicans took control of the House and Lee Daniels was the Speaker. But people, I think, forget before that, Mike Madigan was the Speaker of the House since 1983. Paul, I was a junior in high school.
Yeah, well, that's what he's the longest serving in the nation's history, isn't
yes.
he, if I remember
yeah.
right?
The longest serving State House Speaker in United States history, yes.
Yeah, and so that says a lot. And I met him on occasion when I was mayor, I think three or four times when he came to Decatur. Couldn't have been nicer. And but there's no question about it. He's been running the state. You know, you don't do much in this state without Mike Madigan. And I'm wondering now how that's going to play out, if he still will have this power in the background, if he still made these choices not to run for Speaker again, thinking maybe, you know, they're going to elect me anyway. I don't know. I think he saw the writing on the wall and knew that this was going to be a hard task for him to be elected Speaker again, and he wanted to make sure he had a voice in the person and the backing in the person who was elected Speaker, and I don't think we've heard the last of Mike Madigan.
You know, there wasn't in all that's been released. He's, you know, he will be sworn in as being reelected to his House seat, and that will happen along with all the rest. But there wasn't any sort of mention of what he's going to do long term. I would expect he's not going to stay, right? I mean, I can't imagine him. I know people want to talk about you know being the puppet master and all of that. I it would not surprise me to see him leave.
I don't know. It's hard to predict. You know, at this point, maybe a little further in, we'll know. But I just don't think he's given up a lot of the power that he's had in the background, or away from the cameras. You just don't all of a sudden get away from that, particularly when you've been as powerful for as long as you've been powerful as he has. So
yeah, well, you know, the nickname, the Velvet Hammer, right? The real governor of Illinois. I believe Rich Miller of the Capital Facts once said the pile of political corpses outside of Madigan's statehouse door of those who tried to beat him one way or another is a mile high and a mile wide. I mean, the legacy, good or bad, whatever you want to think about it, there's never been anyone in the United States history that has served that long. It would be hard for me to imagine him just sort of going and being a state rep.
Yeah, so I think there has to be more to it than what we're seeing right now, and that he's retained some of that power in some way. But I would agree with you, if he's just going to be another state rep over there and lose all of the power that he had. I mean, power to Mike Madigan at this point is a way of life. It's just like it's the way he's represented this state, his district, but certainly this state. He's used to being in power. And if you don't have any power anymore, then it's probably not a comfortable place for you, because you remember all those years you had the power and the people you had the power over. So I still feel that he's retained some of that power in some way, and maybe we'll find out. And if he hasn't, then I would agree with you. He may decide that's enough. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I don't have any inside knowledge on that at all. It's just I can't, and not that I think he's taking a back seat. I mean, I agree with you. You know, he picked someone or was at least involved in negotiations to pick someone who has been one of his top lieutenants. But I'm also a little surprised when people wake up and go, well, yeah, but they picked this guy. I mean, what did people think? They were going to pick a Republican?
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. And I think with the reports coming out of Springfield through Capital News and some of the other sources that we get here, when I've been reading when he's backing off, running for speaker again, I don't know. It just seemed to be those stories kept being revised and updated, and it kind of left you wondering, what's going on here? He may not be speaker again, you know, but it just didn't seem to me in reading those stories that he's giving up everything, that he still has his hand in this, but he's going to be leading and having that power in a different way.
Now, the brand new speaker, Chris Welch, did say yesterday he supports term limits for leadership and fair maps. I think at least there's some room for optimism there.
That's for sure. And I think that's anyone who wants good government, you know, wants term limits. Some of the people that they go over there, Mike Madigan's one of them, and they just live there. They almost live the rest of their lives there in power, and there's not much you can do about it. And I think even a lot of these legislators that we have over there have just been over there almost a lifetime. And I think we need new ideas, fresh ideas, and the ability to send people over there to represent maybe a new viewpoint. And that's not going to happen unless term limits would come into being.
And I think fair maps is something that we need to concentrate here on Illinois. I mean, literally, instead of the politician picking who votes for them, let the voters pick who they vote for.
That just seems, I don't know, it just seems so corrupt, doesn't it? It does. Like, if you're the winner, then you get to draw the lines to favor yourself, you know, in the next election or the next 10 years. You know, we're in the digital age. You know, let's do it electronically. Let's leave the human element out. Let's leave the politics out, and let's draw a fair map and elect people from a fair map.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to briefly mention about Mike Madigan, speaker in 1983, but you know he first was elected to the General Assembly in 1971.
Wow. It's, and a lot of people weren't born then. So that's Mike Madigan in the House is about all people have known all these years. And in his own district, I'm sure, the same thing is true. It'd be hard to imagine him not being there representing them.
And you wonder about that when you talk about term limits, when you talk about all of the things that are wrong with politics today. 1971, Paul, I was 5 years old when he was first elected to be a state representative.
Well, that's right. And not only this, you know, we see that certainly in the United States Senate. It's almost in some cases like a Weekend at Bernie's. Remember when they propped that guy up? It's just like some of these people, you wonder if they even know they're there. You know, we used to have Strom Thurmond and some of those that just served their life out there. And that's not good for the country. We need to pay them the respect they need and they have due and they have coming while in office. But we also need to say, it's time to move on. New ideas, fresh faces. And I don't know if you saw the 60 Minute interview with Nancy Pelosi. And Leslie Stahl asked her, well, you're 80 years old, are you bringing some new blood up, you know, new members? And she got real testy about that. It's just like they do not want to give up that power to younger people. And you're 80 years old, you need to be looking down. Who's going to succeed me? Who's going to have this power? What are they going to do with it? And it doesn't seem to be something, whether it's at the state level, you know, or at the national level, that those politicians, when they get in, that they want to do. They want to keep that as long as possible.
Talk to me about the article on the front page of the print edition of the Decatur Tribune this week about Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural speech.
You know, I think that's so significant with everything going on in this country, because some believe his second inaugural speech, which is one of the shortest in history, and came right at the, you know, at the end, very near the end of the Civil War. And he had such a forgiving attitude. And you read that speech, and many believe it's even deeper and better than the Gettysburg Address. Because, you know, when he talks about with malice toward none, charity towards all, the Union was winning that war, and it'd be over soon. But he was reaching out to people and saying, let's come together. Let's come together as a nation. Let's unite. And I think those words of Lincoln in that speech serve us well today. We have people that still want to have this terrible, twisted attitude of hatred towards other people, other parties. We need to listen to the words of Abraham Lincoln. You know, let's come together. Let's forgive. And let's join together and build this nation into the greatest nation that it is. We need that today. We need forgiveness. We need coming together, not getting revenge and avenging hurts of the past. We need to move forward right now as a people united in this country.
Yeah, but unfortunately, history teaches us 6 weeks after that speech was delivered, he was assassinated. And, you know, we have lived through these moments in our country. We'll live through this moment. I have no doubt about that. But it is hard to sort of stack up the imagery you see, the stories you read, the tales that are told about what's going on in this country. The anti-Semitism, even being passed along, Paul, by people I know. I mean, I have seen, you know, on social media about the problem with media and these pictures of people who are running the media networks and the Star of David and basically this argument about the Jews running the media, which you would think is so far back in our history, you know, that people still get up today and think this stuff. It's scary to me. I mean, not personally scary, scary for us as a nation.
Well, yeah, you're right. And that's a sad chapter in our past, in our distant past. And I thought we were better people than that. We've gotten away from that. And it's sad to see that. They believe that when Abraham Lincoln gave his speech, John Wilkes Booth was in the audience there in the Capitol. But he hated Lincoln so much he couldn't give up the hatred. And as you mentioned, 6 weeks later, he assassinated him. There are people today who cannot give up their hatred, you know, of another party or of other people or those who are different. And that has to go. And I mentioned last week when we talked about this that maybe you need to get down so low that you start rising up. You know, hopefully we're at that low, but I'm not so sure. You know, can we go lower? I think until we recognize that we're in this together and we need to lay down these arms and these hatreds and the bias and the political revenge and come together. Joe Biden has an opportunity to do that in his speech. I don't know how many people will listen to him, but that's the right path to take. Let's don't seek revenge on the other party or on people who support Trump. Let's bring them into what we're trying to do, and let's work together to build this nation again.
All right. Were you surprised as a military family that the Joint Chiefs of Staff sent out this letter reminding the U.S. forces that their job is to defend the Constitution? I thought it was a pretty bold move. I mean, usually the military and its leadership abhors sort of politics and doesn't get into that. Were you surprised at all that that was sent out to the 1.3 million active duty service members and the more than 811,000 National Guardsmen and reservists?
I was, and I think it just speaks to the time in which we're living. I think with so much confusion going on and the allegiance to different political rhetoric that's produced, I think everybody is trying to be as safe as they can and as positive as they can that we're going to go down the right path and we're going to cover every base to make sure we don't really go way off, you know, way off the radar. And I think we can't be too careful during this time. It's a time of great distress for a lot of people, but it's also a time of great opportunity. But that won't happen unless we lay down that prejudice and lay down that hatred and say, you know, this is a better country than that, and I'm a better person than that to have those feelings.
Paul, we appreciate it. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week. Paul Osborne, the City Hall Insider, publisher of the Decatur Tribune.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.